Welcome to the revolution. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that's moved its entire production to Bulgaria because it's an awful lot cheaper. It's fair to say, over the years, Dolph Lundgren has endured many ups and downs over the course of his film career. After his role as Ivan Drago in Rocky IV catapulted him to fame, he got to play iconic characters like He-Man and the Punisher, and star in classic action movies like Universal Soldier. But, like the film that made his name, he's also had many rocky moments in his career. By the noughties, he was reduced to the treadmill of DTV action filler. But after the Expendables movies gave his profile a welcome boost, the blonde-haired Swede has enjoyed something of a career renaissance. Now, most other podcasts would have latched on to one of the more prestigious projects in his career, not so Exploding Helicopter. Instead, we're diving headfirst into the bodyguard-turned-actor's wilderness years, so to speak. So on this show, we're taking a look at Dolph Lundgren's 1999 film, Bridge of Dragons. Now, given that we're looking at a film by one of Sweden's national icons, it seemed only fitting that I call up one of that country's other national treasures. With me, once again, is Fred Anderson from Schmollywood Babylon. Welcome back to the show, Fred.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's an honor. I think this is the third time for me. at the Exploding Helicopters. I'm, you know, it's, yeah, what can I say? I love it each time. And, you know, there's always so much fun to talk about. Yes.
Well, yeah, hopefully your returning appearances are like perhaps a kind of extended DTV series that slowly gets better over the time.
Yes. Last time was when time ran out, and I still feel so embarrassed that I mistook two of the actresses. If you remember that, yes, I think about it at least once a week. I'm not kidding you. But thanks to you, I saw, what's the name? Skyfire,
yes.
By Simon West. Fantastic movie. I love that. You know, I would say it's actually superior to When Time Ran Out.
Most films are superior to When Time Ran Out.
No, come on now.
Well, we are talking about a countryman of yours, Dolph Lundgren, and I know you've got a bit of a soft spot for Big Dolph, because you did a little video earlier this year, and, you know, it was quite interesting because, you know, whilst, you know, he is a fellow countryman of yours, you spoke in that video about, you know, how you haven't always been a fan of Dolph. So, Fred, what is your relationship with the Big Lunk?
Oh, Big Lunk. It's been up and down, but it's mostly up nowadays. Basically, since I grew a bit older and mature, and I realized that Dolph is pretty awesome, actually. You see, when I was young, I had an issue with muscle guys. I mean, I was annoyed at them, you know, because I wasn't a muscle guy myself, and I'm still not. But there was this, what I thought was some kind of unhealthy macho style. But I didn't see beyond my own nose, actually, because I didn't like Jean-Claude Van Damme. I wasn't that fond of Stallone or Arnold. Well, Arnold I kind of liked. And Dolph. There was something with Dolph, which in the early 90s, he was considered kind of like a hero / fool here in Sweden. everyone thought, oh, it's cool because he's a movie star and his name is Dolph. Well, his name is not Dolph, actually, but we can talk about that. And, you know, when he came home after some big Hollywood successes, he refused to do interviews in Swedish. Mm. So even in Sweden, he did them in English. And he later said that was because his agent told him to do them in English. And he feels a bit embarrassed about it nowadays, of course. So I had some issue with him. But after years and years of watching his movies, I've come to love him because I can see that it's a sensitive, humorous guy behind all those muscles and blonde hair. There is someone who has a talent for what you do. It's been a process for me. You know, it's hard to say. I probably told in this video that his best friend was my gym teacher. Mm.
You had a good story about that.
Yeah, well, he always talked about Dolph and how they were buddies and they got to know each other in karate school or something like that. And he was at Dolph's wedding, and my gym teacher was about to take a piece of cake. And suddenly Anita Ekberg, the Swedish diva, came and snatched the cake from him and walked away, which I find pretty amusing, you know, both being at Dolph Lundgren's wedding and with Anita Ekberg. You know, that's cool. Mm.
That's some high quality credentials there.
Oh, yeah. And Dolph or Hans or Hasse, as we say in Sweden, did you know he was quite the bully when he was a kid?
Yes, that was the story that I was recalling from the video. So, why don't you share that now?
Well, there is this long-standing hearsay or rumor, and I think there's some truth in it, that when he was a teen, like 13, 14 years old, he had this thing for filling a paper bag with his own poop and you know, put it over the head of younger kids, you know. So they called him Poop Hans, or, you know, Hans, you know, maybe I'm going to get sued over this. I don't know. But that's what I've heard from quite reliable sources, you know. So, you know, but maybe he was compensating for his obviously quite high IQ, I would say. Yeah.
Well, I know you've had some ups and downs with your relationship with Dolph, but I think, you know, you're firmly in the fan camp these days. And I know that for myself, because there was a fierce debate between the two of us when we were setting this show up as to exactly what film we were going to do. And I, being the megalomaniac podcast owner that I am, I overrode your preference and insisted on Bridge of Dragons. But your condition for appearing was that I gave you a chance to extol the virtues of the film that he made before Bridge of Dragons called Sweepers. So, Fred, what is it you think we should love about Sweepers?
Well, Sweepers. Okay, first of all, I need to say this. I'm not a fan of movies that are considered so bad they're good. For me, films are either boring or entertaining, basically. And Sweepers, it's so damn entertaining. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you've never seen anything like it. Okay, Bridge of Dragons might have a slightly better pacing. I agree to that. But there's so much things with Sweepers that's wrong that it actually works towards the end. I mean, we both heard how the director, Keanu Waxman, had no idea how to direct action. And that's something you can see in the movie. That opening scene, there's an attack scene
on a compound, isn't it, or something?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And Dolph is just standing in the same spot for almost the whole action scene, shooting straight forward. Sometimes he looks a little bit behind him, and there's some explosion. He doesn't even move. And there's one clip where truck is falling from the sky and lands on the ground. You have no idea where it comes from. It just falls and lands and explodes and stuff like that. But I mean, there's a lot of cool stunts. The explosions are awesome, and it also has some kind of Indiana Jones vibe. You know, they're in a mine shooting and running, and then they have a really, really cool scene at a train towards the end where Dolph is jumping with a motocross up on the train, and there's John Woo style shootouts everywhere. And, you know, it's a classic in when it comes to Dolph's 90s movies. It is a classic.
Well, it does kind of tie very nicely into the film that we're talking about here, Bridge of Dragons, because as you alluded to, Dolph was so dissatisfied with Keone Waxman's direction on Sweepers that, you know, he basically was sort of insisting on a bit of influence and control of the director of his next project, because he wanted to work with somebody who actually understood action. And, you know, that's why we see him in this film with Isaac Florentine, who I think we're going to talk about a little bit later, a very experienced action director behind the camera on this one. So, yes, great to hear your passion for Sweepers. And certainly Dolph's experience on that film sort of influences, his choice of this particular project and certainly who he is working with. I think it's time we got stuck into Bridge of Dragons itself. So let's see if Trailer Man can tell us exactly when this film was set.
In a time when peace and freedom turned to chaos and destruction, a soldier was chosen to lead his people out of the darkness.
He murdered my father! He killed your king!
Kill him! Dolph Lundgren, Kerry Tagawa, Rachel Shane, A Bridge of Dragons.
War Child is a tough and loyal soldier in an army headed up by the ambitious General Ru Chang. Ru Chang is aiming to take over the country by quashing a peasant's rebellion and by marrying Princess Halo, the country's new ruling monarch. But matters become complicated when Princess Halo runs off after discovering that Ru Chang killed her father in order to advance his position. War Child is dispatched to bring back Princess Halo, but War Child doesn't just find the missing monarch, he also finds love and throws his lot in with the rebels after becoming appalled by Ru Chang's evil ways. Heading up the cast in this is obviously Dolph Lundgren as War Child. As Ru Chang, we have a perennial Asian bad guy, Kari Hirooka Tagawa, and Gary Hudson is also in the supporting cast here, who, if you've watched a lot of 90s DTV action, you'll recognise his face. In the director's chair, as we've mentioned, is Isaac Florentine, who, if you're a fan of B-movie action, you'll know him from his work with Scott Adkins on the Ninja and Undisputed films. This film has got a 4.8 rating on IMDb and a 43% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So now that we've gotten all of that out of the way, Fred, what did you make of Bridge of Dragons?
When I first saw Bridge of Dragons, I guess in the 90s on tape, I was kind of, I didn't know what to think about it, because I'd never seen anything like it when it comes to this kind of production. I mean, I remember I saw Cold Harvest by Isaac Florentine earlier with a very, very underrated Gary Daniels in the lead, which is a cool Western take slash post-apocalyptic action movie. But what struck me with Bridge of Dragons was the visuals, because considering what was probably a quite low budget and a quite weak script, it kind of just floods us with amazing shots and stunts. It felt so much more ambitious than I ever would expect it to be. It's I don't want to be too celebrating here, you know, because I have a tendency to proclaim things as masterpieces. But yeah,
I wondered if that was where you were going, Fred. Yeah, I could see you trying valiantly to resist declaring Bridge of Dragons a masterpiece.
I had to pull back there a little bit, actually. What was the question now? I kind of got lost in this.
What was your overall take on the film? And you've mentioned one of the aspects of this film, which I think I completely agree with you with, which this film looks fantastic. From what I can find on the internet, this was made for something like $3 or $4 million. And it looks like a much, there are films which have had much bigger budgets than that don't look as good as this film. The use of locations is brilliant and really adds to that, to the sort of idea of this being like a much bigger, more spectacular sort of movie than you might otherwise think.
I would say the one of the strengths with it is the locations, because here we have one of the few, I would say, new image productions that is shot in Sofia, Bulgaria, that actually embraces the kind of environments that are there. But because usually they try to disguise it as like the United States or some other country. But here they just go full on with the architecture and the landscapes and the nature. And I think that was a very good thing to do when you were about to shoot a movie like this, because it has this fairy tale style of story. And there was, you know, there's no reason to hide the location, basically. I mean, the palace, if you remember, the palace where Ru Shang is and the princess, you call him Princess Halo?
Yes, Princess Halo.
That house has been used in so many movies. I've seen it being, you know, torn to pieces by monsters and exploded. And finally, they use it for something where it actually fits in the story, like a palace. I like that.
Well, I don't. I know I was gently ribbing you for your enthusiasm for this film, but I'll lay my cards on the table. You know, I actually think this is like B movie action at its best. I mean, it looks fantastic. You know, there is a very interesting like aesthetic and design to this film. You described it as fairy. There's a sort of fairy tale quality to this film. Completely agree with that. But, you know, and I think what it does is it you know, this film takes place in this, you know, through the set design and through the costume design. It takes place in, you know, there's this idea that it's taking place in a weird alternate world, which is part medieval, part like feels like a sort of futuristic World War II, which might not make a lot of sense, but if you've watched it, I think you'll know what I'm sort of driving at with that type of description.
Oh yeah, because they have this vision and they use this vision for the whole movie. It's I usually say that movies succeed when they're made on a low budget or a weak script or whatever. They decide for an even style through the whole movie, then the whole production value goes up. Because you see some movies sometime where they obviously give up at certain points. They just, let's do this, you know, let's get over it.
But they run out of time, or they run out of money, or they run out of time. Something, as you say, it sort of gets to a certain point and it just, feels like they've stopped or had to stop.
Yeah, but here you have a very even quality through it all. They use the locations, they use the clothes, they use the props in a very intelligent way, I would say, for being the movie it is.
Because they don't try to do too much, I don't think. It's a sort of like a little garnish. So we see some of the like the sort of the peasants, and they're using horses and carts. But the, you know, clearly this is a world with helicopters and with other vehicles. And then, you know, some of the costumes. Again, you've got a lot of soldiers who are dressed like they are Nazis out of some sort of World War II film. And then you see some of the sort of peasants, and they're dressed like they're in the 17th century. So here, that mishmash of like different styles, different centuries, it actually just creates something that's quite timeless, and it just looks so much better than probably has any right to.
Oh, absolutely. The only thing which I react to every time I see the film is one tiny part of the set dressing, and that's the number 666 on the helicopters. I dig it, of course. It's Bridge of Dragons, but it's also it also feels like, why, you know,
it's a bit on the nose, isn't it? It's a bit these are the bad guys, because you know, they got the number of the beast on their vehicles.
But it's a fun detail, so I appreciate it, but still I would have taken it down a notch there if I was the set designer for this.
Well, there are a couple of other aspects to the style. So not just in terms of like the look of the film, but we should probably also talk about the sound of this film, because that is, you know, it's very clear from, you know, watching this film that I don't think they bothered with a microphone at any point on set. Everything has been, every sound, all the dialogue, every sound effect has been dubbed in during post-production. You know, and also there's some aspects to how they use the sound as well. So we get a lot of those type of Asian-style martial art movie whooshes throughout this. You know, what did you make of the sound and how that was used in this film?
Well, I'm of course I like it, but it also seemed to tie together to Isaac Florentine's deep interest in Hong Kong movies or Japanese movies. I mean, what I remember, all films he made during these years, the 90s, had this kind of over-exaggerated sound effects. I remember in U.S. Seals 2 from 2001, a couple of years later. I mean, there's sound effects on every movement of the hand, you know, even if they move a finger. I'm not kidding you. You hear this swoosh sound. And I it feels like there is a lot of, Isaac feels like a 12-year-old boy here, you know, or 13-year-old. You know, I've got to have sound effects on everything because it's so cool. I think it's made with a lot of love. You know, it's made because Isaac Florentine is Isaac Florentine, and he wants it to look cool and sound cool. And I mean, Bridge of Dragons is a prime example on sound effects in a movie like this. I wish that he could go back to this. I wish he could look back into his career and bring this back again to a new audience, because it's needed, especially in this kind of direct-to-video action romps.
Yeah, you need, for those types of films, I think it really helps if you've got a director who can bring a bit of style to proceedings, because there are so many of those films, and a lot of them just do feel like the same. So when you've got somebody, yeah, like Isaac Florentine, who is bringing, you know, can mix up some interesting elements, can add a dash of style to proceedings, it really elevates the final product, certainly in my opinion. I mean, just coming back to some of the overdubbing of sound effects here, you know, there are some, you know, I kind of feels that it adds to this otherworldly, unreal world quality that the film has, which with the kind of its visual look. So, you know, I don't like yourself, I don't actually mind it myself, but it did kind of, you know, Isaac Florentine sort of cut his teeth you know, working on Power Rangers, and some of the style choices in here do feel a bit sort of influenced, you know, perhaps by his time working on directing all those episodes of Power Rangers.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think also, I mean, this film is shot in Bulgaria, and a quite huge chunk of the cast is Bulgarian actors. And obviously, I mean, it was probably the easiest thing to redub everyone to make them have a more correct accent, which also made the movie feel even more like some old school matinee, but with a huge body count instead. I always appreciate when Velizar Binev shows up. He is credited in this movie as the tailor to the princess. He's a bald guy, often with a beard and a mustache, and he's in all these new Image movies. He always shows up. You know, it's like he's like the, oh, I can't find the word in English. It's like his Lucky Charm thing, you know.
I mean, we've said a lot of positive things about this film. I'm afraid, Fred, I'm going to mention a few negatives, because there are some unanswered questions in this film. So you have Ru Chang, who is this general who is engaged in some sort of conflict with, there's some sort of rebellion going on within the country that he's, you know, leading the army against. But, you know, we never find out what that war is about. And, you know, that just seemed to be emblematic of, to me, of a few sort of ideas within the film that don't really go anywhere particularly interesting. So there's this idea within the film that, that War Child owes his current status in the military in this fantasy country down to Ru Chang's benevolence, because the idea is, I think, that Lundgren's character was an orphan and sort of Ru Chang sponsored him to then become the sort of soldier that he is now. And the princess character, you know, we meet her early in the film, and she's established as a bit of a badass because she's taking part in these sort of stick fighting fights. But then, I mean, we get to see her use her martial arts skills at a couple of points in the movies, but for a large chunk of the movie, she's then becomes a damsel in distress. So it feels like they didn't quite you know, is she meant to be Cyber Princess is just going to faint at the sight of blood, or is she, you know, somebody who's a bit more of a protagonist in proceedings? And there was a few few elements within the film that just didn't seem like they'd really work them through properly.
I believe what I've heard, the script was written quite extensively before the shooting began, and what I've read on IMDb, so I don't know how to trust that, is that they had basically a completely different script when the cast arrived. I also learned that the original title for Bridge of Dragons was Bride of Dragons, but it wasn't considered, you know, I guess, macho enough action movie, and you know, so maybe the Princess Halo part had a more, you know, a bigger role in the story or in the action before this was rewritten, you know, especially since she's mentioned in the title, in the original title. But yeah, I agree with you, because that first scene where she shows up doing her stick fighting on the poles is actually a fantastic scene. And on her part, it's kind of let down after that. I would say, yeah, you're correct. Yeah, I have to. Yeah, okay, I have to give you that. You know, even if you take this movie way too seriously.
Yeah. But having said that, I mean, I don't actually find. I mean, I've watched this film 3 times now, and yes, I notice those things, but they don't actually dent my enjoyment of the film, because I think there's too much other good that's going on, and the pace and story just keeps clicking along really nicely. And so, do we really care what the full detail of the background between Ru Chang and War Child is? Not so much. I'm happy for what we get on screen here. But I did hear, talking about the title of this film, I heard a slightly different story, though, about the title of the movie. So apparently the original ending was going to see, you know, Ru Chang and Dolph's character fighting on a bridge with their two opposing armies, the rebel army and kind of Ru Chang's army, kind of closing in on the bridge. So the idea is that, I guess, that, you know, Ru Chang and Dolph are the dragons and they are having a fight on a bridge. Hence, you know, you can get to the title from that. So I'd heard a slightly different story. But I think what we can take away from all of this is that, clearly, there were some extensive changes to the script here, which means that we are left with a film that has a title that makes no sense in terms of like.
Well, I think what you heard it sounds more realistic somehow, because, I mean, at the end there, of course, there's no bridge at all. They're just on a field somewhere outside a hangar, which sounds like the typical, okay, we run out of money, we need to do this thing quick and fast, let's do it here. Yeah, that was new to me, actually, but I will incorporate that in my lore around the movie now, so I can, you know, I can have it as a party trick or something when people start talking about this movie. Thank you, I appreciate it.
You go to the best parties if you know, people start chatting about Bridge of Dragons.
there's a meme going around where there's a guy standing in the corner and everyone else is dancing, and I'm the guy in the corner complaining silently that no one wants to talk about the movies I love. You know, people kind of tune out when I start talking about movies. It's a bit sad, to be honest, but I missed it.
I hope no one is tuning out right now as they're listening to us chat about Bridge of Dragons. But let's just briefly, you know, touch on the action in this movie. Yeah, you know, what did you make of what we get here? Because there's certainly lots of explosions here, lots of extensive use of, you know, slow motion. There's a bit of martial arts in here. So what did you make of the action that we get in this?
The action is quite fabulous, I would say. To be honest, what I kind of miss is more martial arts. I would love to have seen more fights, especially since the title involves dragons and stuff, you know, because that says that there need to be fights. But, I mean, it has so much other things going on. When I watched it again the other day, I was thinking that there is non-stop action. There is one action scene after another, then they stops and talks a little bit, maybe a kiss, I don't remember if there was a kiss, but it feels like it should be somewhere, and then there's a new battle scene or a new shootout. And as we know, Isaac Florentine is a master of framing action scenes. I still think he's good at it, but at this time, the 90s, he had so much ambitions with delivering visual treats to action fans out there. You have these big wide shots of people falling from heights, bumping into something hard on the way down and slamming into the ground. You have people running towards the camera while explosions going off and they're flying away. And it's like one takes. I love that. You see what happens. I don't want to sound like a grumpy old man, but because I hate when they, you know, when they destroy the action with lots of cuts. But here you see it, and it feels so much Hong Kong. It feels like the essence of really good 90s direct-to-video action. It's a superb action. I would say, you know, it's okay. I will stay away from the masterpiece part, but it is very good action scenes. There's a lot of love in them.
Well, you've been very complimentary about Isaac Florentine's work. Obviously, you know, we're talking about Bridge of Dragons here, but he's made, you know, a whole bunch of other action movies. Have you got, you know, any other favourites, you know, within his film CV?
Oh, yeah. I mentioned earlier US Seals 2, which after Cold Harvest, I would say that when I saw US Seals 2, I was like blown away. I was like, what the heck is this? What is this? How can a movie that looks so the cover be so creative? I mean, have you seen it? It's like
I need to correct that. It sounds like
I'm sure it has a exploding helicopter somewhere also, you know, because it's, you know, it's that kind of movie. But there's so much creative, violent fights and crazy stunts. That movie is basically one big excuse to show stunts and action. There is no story. There's just a bunch of militaries going in somewhere to save something or stop a nuclear thing or whatever. It doesn't matter, actually. I mean, it's a fantastic movie. Cold Harvest is so cool also, even if it feels like he had some issue with the budget there, but Gary Daniels is cool enough. During the later years, I absolutely love the Undisputed films and his ninja movies with Scott Adkins, because Scott is such an awesome guy. The first ninja I actually like more than the second, even if the second has more action, but the first one kind of holds together slightly better. Then I want to, you know, he did a movie with Antonio Banderas in 2017, Acts of Vengeance. I think it's pretty decent, actually.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a good, solid action movie. And you should do an episode on Antonio Banderas' weird direct-to-video career he had during recent years. You know, he made a lot of fun stuff in it. Just saying.
Yeah.
Well, that's
he did one called Security, which was very good. Die Hard in a shopping center.
Yes, I love that movie. it's like, it's so simple, you know, just a shopping mall, Banderas and Ben Kingsley as the bad guy. Love it. Everyone should see it now.
Okay, I think we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk.
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spots sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs after Dolph and the princess try to escape Ru Chang in a helicopter, which is a big Antonov-style helicopter. They quickly find themselves pursued by another chopper. Dolph's copter is crippled by gunfire, and after landing the Whirlybird, Dolph and the princess quickly exit the vehicle before it explodes behind them. They then find themselves under fire by the other chopper. Luckily enough, the rebels turn up and open fire on the helicopter, which then flies, which gets damaged, and then flies behind the always available ridgeline before crashing and exploding, because we see a big fireball sort of, you know, come up from behind the hill. Fred, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
Well, I have to compare them to the exploding helicopters in Sweepers. I mean, the ones in Bridge of Dragons are kind of on the cheap side, I would say. There is, I mean, the first explosion is the good old explosions in front of the helicopter, you know, on a secure distance. And the second one is the yeah, I mean, we love it, of course. Is the ridge explosion? The helicopter disappears. And there's obviously an explosion much closer to the camera up on the ridge. But I mean, the fireballs are lovely. There's big fireballs, lots of fire, lots of power in them, which I think kind of makes up for them being a bit cheap. I would, of course, rather have seen a real helicopter explode, or at least a miniature. I mean, the helicopters in Sweepers are obviously real, and or they're miniatures. So there's it has a slightly higher quality in Sweepers when it comes to the helicopter action, I would say. But then again, the helicopters themselves in Bridge of Dragons are so cool. It might be my favorite helicopters ever in a direct-to-video action movie. They must be some old Bulgarian military helicopters or something. I don't know, but they look so massive.
Well, I agree with you. I think they are old Bulgarian military helicopters, because we see a shot of Dolph Lundgren, you know, getting in the pilot seat and, you know, prepping his chopper for takeoff. And, you know, we see the dashboard in that helicopter. I mean, that helicopter looks like it's knackered. It looks like it should be taken to the junkyard. And that's just the dashboard. And no, God knows what the engine, the state of the engine looks like. So, I mean, this is certainly a helicopter that's seen lots of action, but I enjoyed that beaten up quality that the cockpit had. Going back to the explosions themselves, a number of cheats are employed here, but you know, we can forgive the films that, you know, these helicopters have got to go back to their owners, and so the cheats are kind of understandably employed here by Florentine. But as you say, the fireballs themselves are, you know, fantastic, and you know, they're obviously, this is not, they're not using CGI here, they're using, you know, whatever explosives or pyrotechnics they've got to hand. And yeah, there's nothing like looking at real fire burning. You know, CGI fire, I mean, they can do it very well, but you can always tell a real fireball from a fake one. And there's just nothing like looking at some real flames.
I mean, the explosions during the 90s, I would say they're among the best in the history of film. There was like, you even better than the 80s, I would say. Maybe that's a controversial statement here, but I would say that the 90s explosions in direct-to-video action are, you know, it's superior to all other decades. You know, just look at PM Entertainment, their movies, and the Dolph Lundgren movies. There was always this huge, fiery beautiful explosions. I bet we sound like arsonists here or something like that. But you know, there is some destructive poetry in watching a good fireball. There is, you know.
You'll hear no argument from me on that, Fred. No argument from me on that. Okay, I think it's time to wrap things up on this show. Fred, thank you for joining me once again. It's always a pleasure. Do you want to take a moment to plug some of your stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you. First of all, always great to be on your podcast. I love it. I would say if you want to join me for more shenanigans when it comes to movies, come to Instagram, and Shmollywood Babylon is the username. I'm also whining a lot on Twitter on the account Homo Satanis. Not only movies, there's a lot of weird stuff going on there, so I'm sorry for that already. But from time to time, there is movies. And if you want to listen to a podcast in English with me and Jason Meredith, you should listen to the Human Centipod, which has been going on since 2013, I think. I know there's a different, another podcast now with the same name, but ours...
What?
Yeah, I know. There's some hipsters talking about hipster things. I'm a bit annoyed about that. But ours, the Human Centipod, is the original. So, check that. Thank you.
As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website, explodinghelicopter.com, or follow us on social media. We'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.